20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, Packers fans? Happy Monday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Hope your weekend treated you well. Sports are a cruel, fickle beast. Thunder, congratulations. That was a heck of an NBA championship run for them and what could be the potential beginning of a dynasty. They are certainly set up for the long haul. And, you know, obviously for just anyone in general watching that series to have to see Halliburton tear his Achilles in all likelihood, man, that is just such a like I said, it's a fickle beast when you have teams that you're trying to get to the finish line and win a championship and just cheering them on. I can't even imagine Jordan Love, you know, makes it, you know, into the Super Bowl and, you know, NFC championship game, gets an injury, wants to play through it to give his team the best chance to win the Super Bowl. And then you get to the Super Bowl, your team's actually doing well. Jordan Love starts off amazing. And, you know, he goes down with an injury. Not only that's going to take him out of the game, you lose the Super Bowl, but it will take him out of the whole next season as well. That's as tough of a situation as you would ultimately get in. So I feel for the Pacers, which was an incredible story throughout the season. I know this is a Packers podcast, but I think one of the things that actually uniquely ties in well is A, injuries in sports are the absolute worst, but B, the Thunder are sort of an interesting case study in an interesting sort of way for the Packers in the fact that this is a team that was really, I get that Shea was a trade, right? But really kind of built as a very young team coming up together, going through some playoff losses and some heartache leading up to it. And really kind of came into their own this year and took that next step in all phases to kind of what Brian Gutekunst said this past year of having that urgency to go out and start winning championships. And the Thunder were able to transition from that young up-and-coming team into now an NBA champion. And that's sort of the same, you know, sort of journey that the Packers are going to have to go from this youngest team in football 2 years in a row, made the playoffs 2 years in a row, but now it's time to make that next step into a championship contender. Now, the Packers don't have Shea Gilgeous-Alexander at the moment, an MVP of the league, one of the best players in the league. They need somebody like Jordan or, you know, another player to transition into that role. And of course, their young role players and young talented players need to take that next step as well. Of course, NBA and NFL rosters are different and it's not exactly apples to apples, but the point stands. At some point, you go from this young up-and-coming team to the team that has to actually take that next step to become a championship. Kudos to the Thunder for doing it. Now, hopefully, the Packers can follow on a similar trajectory to that of the OKC Thunder. All right, that's not our main topic today, though, obviously. Our main topic today is going to be the Green Bay Packers, and more specifically, Nate Hobbs, had the opportunity to go through and grade every single snap of his from this past season. So 554 of them. Yes, it's a process. Thankfully, I guess, we did this already for Isaiah Simmons, as well as Mecole Hardman, two of their big, I don't know if we want to call it big, but two of their free agent signings. Isaiah Simmons was less than 200 snaps and Mecole Hardman was just over 100. So thank you, both of you, for that. That made my life a little bit easier. Even Nate Hobbs, right, if he played the whole season, probably would have been closer to 1,000 snaps. This was only 554. And Aaron Banks that I'm working on right now is 775, something right around there. So I'm about halfway-ish through that at the moment. Should get to that later this week. But today we're going to be going through those 554 snaps, how he graded, and more specifically, what I learned from that process. Remember, he had a 61.4 PFF grade for this past season, getting 80.1 as a rookie, followed by a 60.9, a 69.0, and then again, a 61.4 this past year. So from PFF standpoint, even though I did not go through and grade his other three seasons, from PFF standpoint, this season was basically as bad as it gets from a grading standpoint. He had two other seasons that were better, one significantly better as a rookie, and then one that was very similar to that 61.4 grade. But the point being is that there are even better seasons allegedly out there on tape. I just so happened to grab this one, which of course is the most recent. Of those 554 snaps, My grade on the season for Nate Hobbs was a plus 1.50. The lowest grade that he had in any of the games that I graded, which was, of course, all of them from this past year, was a negative 0.25, which is a very reasonable grade. That's not a terrible grade by any means for a corner who started multiple games. To not have any game that graded significantly in the negative is a very, very good sign. He was remarkably consistent. I think you're really going to appreciate the way that he plays. I really enjoyed watching him on tape. And I think Packers fans are really going to enjoy him as a starting corner for this team. And I came away, the grade might not seem anything crazy, more on that momentarily, but I thought the play on the field spoke volumes of who he is as a player and how he's going to be able to help specifically the Packers moving forward. Nate Hobbs at plus 1.50 would have been my highest graded corner on the team this past year. Nate Hobbs plus 1.50. Jaire Alexander plus 0.75, Carrington Valentine plus 0.55, Keyshawn Nixon straight even, Robert Rochelle straight even, Corey Ballantyne negative 0.15, and Eric Stokes negative 3.75. What I really want to point out here, Jaire played 300 some snaps this past year and didn't play any in like the final part of the season, right? When the season was on the line in the playoffs, etc. Eric Stokes played a good chunk of snaps for this team this past year, had a negative 3.75 grade. Going from Eric Stokes at negative 3.75 to Nate Hobbs at plus 1.50 is a plus 5.25 swing in the positive for Green Bay. That is, you know, adding a significant player to your team when you look at the difference between those two. Just adding Nate Hobbs in and of itself, good, solid corner, right? Positive corner, again, would have been my highest graded corner on the team this past year. But going from Eric Stokes, who now moves on, ironically enough, to the Raiders, to Nate Hobbs, who again, at plus 1.5, is, I think, going to be a fairly remarkable difference for this past defense. I know that there is a lot of stress, anxiety, and disappointment over what this cornerback room looks like right now. The fact that Keyshawn Nixon, who had an even grade for the year in his last 10 games when he moved to outside corner was, or sorry, it might have been 12 games. Either way, when he moved to outside corner was well in the positive, that Nate Hobbs was in the positive and Carrington Valentine was in the positive. That's a very good sign for your corner room. Having three corners that are grading in the positive is huge. And of course, they have Javon Bullard as well. I am with you. And I think most people, when they say the depth at the cornerback room is definitely concerning. And I get that when you move Javon Bullard down into the slot, and because so many guys can play outside and in that slot position, you have some versatility there and it feels like you have four corners. The truth is, as of right now, not to say things can't change in training camp or moving forward, et cetera, but as of right now, you have three true corners. Carrington Valentine, Nate Hobbs, and Keyshawn Nixon. And yes, I think Nixon is better than a lot of people think that he is, at least once he moved to outside corner. I think Nate Hobbs is a legitimately good starter. I think Carrington Valentine, you have to remember, has been a good player who's only in year three. So he should continue to get better as well. At least, fingers crossed, that's the hope. I feel good about those three. There's nothing that I'm losing sleep over from the starting three corners at the moment. Not having another piece after that that I feel comfortable stepping in if you actually need a true corner, that gives me some anxiety. I still think that there's a world in which Kamal Haddon, Kalen King, Micah Robinson, one of these players could step up, or that, again, maybe Goody finds, you know, like he normally does, just finds another good player somewhere, whether it's off of a practice squad or whether it's during cutdowns or trading a sixth or seventh round pick at cutdown time, whatever it might be, he might be able to find that. Right now, though, I'm not concerned about the starting quality players. I am still a little bit concerned about the depth, but that certainly is not a Nate Hobbs conversation because he's going to be stepping up and playing a significant role for this defensive backfield. And I'm very excited about that because I think he's going to be a pretty solid addition to this defensive back room. And again, a huge night and day difference from what we saw even from Eric Stokes just this past season. I'll take it a step further. Nate Hobbs would have been tied with Devontae Wyatt for my fifth highest graded defender this past year for Green Bay. Xavier McKinney was at a plus 6.6. Edgerrin Cooper was at a plus 4.75. Rashawn Gary, plus 2.10. Evan Williams, plus 1.8. And then Devontae Wyatt, and in this case, Nate Hobbs, would have been at plus 1.50. Eric Stokes was my lowest graded player on the team, not just on defense, not just that corner, on the entire team. You were going from the lowest graded player on the team to what would have been tied for the fifth highest graded defender. Again, I cannot stress to you enough how big and significant that swing can potentially be. Cornerback and offensive line, to me, are your two weak link positions. What I mean by that is you can have four really good offensive linemen, but if you've got one really bad one, it's going to matter a lot. And they're going to pick on that one offensive lineman. They're going to make him get in one-on-one matchups a ton, and they're going to try to expose that player. And more often than not, they're going to get exposed. Cornerback is the same way, is that you might have a Xavier McKinney and an Evan Williams, and you know, you could have a Jaire Alexander in his prime, and you could have, you know, whoever else, right? If you've got a really bad player out there, they're going to attack that one player over and over and over. And we saw it a lot with Stokes. Teams were willing to go after him. Adding now in what I think is a much, much stronger starter and no real weak link at that cornerback spot right now, I think that makes you such a stronger defensive backfield in general. So again, I think this is a major swing going from Stokes to Nate Hobbs. We'll be right back. Overall, I learned that you have a very, really solid, sound, good corner, and that you're going to add to that defensive back room in a real way just by adding him. But outside of that, there was a lot of other things that I learned when I went back and watched every snap of Nate Hobbs as well. The first thing that I'll say is he was extremely knowledgeable in coverage concepts. Whether it was cover two, cover three, cover four, man-to-man, whatever it was that the defense called for, he knew exactly how to play it. This is a player who has now started 4 years in this league, and he is not, you know, some rookie that's coming in and trying to start from scratch. This is not somebody that Jeff Hafley's going to, you know, throw some things out there and he's going to be like, I don't understand how to do it. No, this is a well-versed, well-rounded corner that can give you a ton of versatility and can play any coverage that you want to give him. And it's not just that. When I say he's knowledgeable in coverage concepts, yes, he can play everything, which is great, but he also knows how to communicate everything. You can tell he's out there communicating with his teammates, making sure that everyone's on the same page. I counted one maybe blown coverage that was between him and another player, and it was tough to kind of tell who was supposed to go with who. There was a stacked receiver, so not to get too much into the weeds here, but you, as a defensive back group, you number the players on the opposing team that you're, you basically give them numbers. And what can happen is you'll motion somebody in and you have a number for one player, number for the other. And when they motion, if the wide receiver goes wide, you switch those numbers. If they don't go wide, the motion player, then you keep the numbers that you had already. What can happen, you have a receiver go in motion and he stops right behind the player that was already there. And now what you have to hope is that the two defensive backs that are covering these two wide receivers are on the same page with where that numbering is and who's responsible for who. And when you get that stack like that, sometimes both players think they're responsible for the same player and they both go with one and the other goes in a different direction and of course ends up wide open. There was one of those that I saw happen with Nate Hobbs. Don't even know that it was necessarily his fault. Could have easily been the other player's fault, but he was always consistent with his coverages, knowing who, you know, what he was supposed to do. That was all very, very noteworthy as I was watching the tape on him. And to go along with this is in my next two here, he can play both inside and outside, and he can play both man and zone. This is not a corner that's limited to certain defenses. And I know that there's been a lot of discussion of like, why is Green Bay just trying to pick up this slot corner and play him on the outside? He's clearly a slot corner. That's what he's been meant to do. That's the type of contract that you're giving him, whatever direction that you want to go in that. And while I do think he maybe fits the slot a little bit better, there was nothing that I saw on tape that would make me believe that he can't play on the outside. I thought he looked like a legitimately good starting corner on the outside, just like he did in the slot. I didn't have any issue with this outside play. And there was not a single time where I watched his tape and have been like, you know what? if he was just inside on that play instead of outside, he would have been totally fine. But he looks totally unnatural playing outside or anything like that. He looked completely comfortable playing outside corner, and like he had been playing it his entire career. Like if you would have told me he never played in the slot and just played outside when I watched him on the outside, I would have been like, yeah, he looks like he's played a lot on the outside. So I have no concern of him being just a slot corner that can't play on the outside. I thought he was equal at both of them, both in the slot and playing outside corner. So that's huge. And again, I think you can play a little bit of man-to-man coverage with him as well. I'm not sure that Green Bay wants to live in man because I don't know that overall they've got great man cover corners, but you're going to have to call it from time to time. You're going to have to use it as a change of pace, something that, you know, you flash every once in a while just to keep offenses honest, to kind of guessing of what coverage is going to come next. And I do think that Hobbs is capable of playing that as well. So you're not just getting somebody that is, you know, sound in his coverage concepts, but he can play inside in the slot, can play outside, can play man, can play zone. And again, knows every zone coverage concept known to man and usually is very good at communicating those things as well. That is a value add to your secondary. There's no two ways around it. The other thing that I noted, I'm sure I went back when I did his actual scouting report. Again, for those unfamiliar, I did a whole scouting report on Nate Hobbs, watched a lot of the tape, didn't watch all of it. But you're looking at that with a scouting lens of what is he going to be, right? When you're looking at him from like a coaching slash grading lens, you're looking at what did he do? And it's two totally different mindsets that you're sort of living in. I'm sure on his scouting report, I noted the fact that he had zero penalties this past year. What I will say is when I was going through and watching him, you know, I didn't go and reread the scouting report or anything like that because I kind of wanted a fresh slate and kind of wanted that new perspective, right? I noted it on my notes of like, he doesn't have any penalties. Like there's no flag surrounding this guy. And on all 22, it doesn't tell you, like you can't always see if there's a flag on the play. And it doesn't really matter because when you're evaluating it, I don't really care if he was called for a hold or not. I'll evaluate it to say whether or not he was too grabby or could have been called for a hold on a play. So there are plays I'm sure that you could theoretically get called for a hold, but there was really nothing there, or that he didn't get called for a hold, but he was holding on the play. But you just watched him on tape and I'm like, I didn't see anything that would have raised to the level of a holding penalty or a pass interference penalty or anything like it. And then I went and checked it afterwards and yeah, no penalties at all this past season, which is fairly remarkable. So he plays a very clean brand of football, doesn't get, you know, too grabby, doesn't get too panicky at the point of attack to the point where he starts to like take down players or anything like that. It's just good, consistent football. I mentioned earlier that he is knowledgeable in coverage concepts. He also is very knowledgeable and understands route concepts. And that's where I think his ability to not get into penalty situations, but just making him a good corner overall as well, is he's running the routes for some of these wide receivers. Like he understands like the splits and what sort of routes could potentially be coming. You can tell he does his homework. He's well-versed in what they're trying to do, what they're trying to accomplish based on where they're lined up on the field and what he tries to take away. Sometimes you can limit and guess a little bit more on what they're trying to do. He understands it. And there are times where, like I said, he's running these routes for the wide receiver. It's pretty fun to watch. But again, you can just tell this is a very studious and smart defensive back who's played 4 years in the league of high caliber, high quality football. Again, adding that to your team is definitely going to be something that adds value. And I think is going to really help the rest of that secondary out in a significant way. The next one I'll say is an interesting one. We talked about the penalties and the lack thereof. He's got the sneaky veteran mentality slash ability to get away with some holds here and there. Nothing major, nothing that again would rise to the level of actually throwing a penalty flag, which is exactly what you want to see. Listen, the best defenders in the world in hockey and soccer and football, they understand that you have to be crafty. You have to be smart. There's got to be a little tug of a jersey every now and again, you know, just little things that can gain you the slightest advantage. Not a full pull when they're trying to pull away or anything like that, but just little tugs here and there that make it more difficult for the wide receiver and more advantageous for you as the defensive back. And what I would say is these are very sneaky, savvy veteran grabs of things that he knows he can get away with that are not going to be penalized and that are quite frankly very smart to do. think of some of those like playoff games in the past, whether it's against Tampa, Seattle, whatever, where their corners are always physical in playoff games. And it's like, well, guess they're letting them play. There's a level of that that you need. You need some physicality in the defensive backfield, and you need to have that ability to say, hey, I know how to foul without fouling. And I think Nate Hobbs is a very, very astute and sound understanding of exactly that. Hey, I'm going against some guys that can run 4.240s or that are 6'5" or whatever the case may be. These are very talented wide receivers. You don't get to where you want to go by playing things straight up, by playing it even up, just like the best offensive lineman, defensive lineman. You have to know what you can get away with. Nate Hobbs is a very great understanding of that. And again, what I will call sneaky, savvy veteran holds that are not just noteworthy, they're necessary. You have to be able to do some of that stuff, get away with it. And Nate Hobbs is very good at exactly that. We'll be right back. Talked a little bit earlier, but he's very assignment sure. He knows where he's supposed to be, does not blow any assignments. Like I said, there was maybe one that he blew. And overall, he's just going to be where he's supposed to be, contesting stuff and making it very difficult on the wide receiver. It's not to say that the receiver can't run a great route or that he can't go up and get a ball against Nate Hobbs. Like, that stuff can happen from time to time, but he's going to be in position and he's going to make it so that you're going to have to make a contested catch or that you're going to have to do something special in order to make a completion against Hobbs. And if you're not in the right place at the right time for the right reasons, it's not usually going to go well for you. But Hobbs is very in control of those situations and very assignment sure with where he's supposed to be and who he's supposed to be covering. Now, on top of that, and we kind of talked about it a little bit earlier as well, but he's just extremely consistent. He's the same player game in and game out. There was no change in mentality. If he got beat, he's got that ability where if he does get beat, it's next play. No worries. You're going to keep battling no matter what. And you just saw a real true level of consistency to his game where he, again, man zone, didn't matter what wide receiver he was covering. I thought the Ravens game early on was a great game for him because you saw him cover Zay Flowers, Mark Andrews, Rashad Bateman. It was like all different types of receivers, tight ends, etc. And he was able to handle all of it. So again, you see that sort of stuff with, again, how he's able to just kind of counterbalance some of the stuff that they're trying to do against him. And you just see this level of consistency over and over and over and over again. And to add on top of that, one of the other things that I noted here is there was not, if you're looking for big plays, Nate Hobbs is not the player to be watching for either side. He does not give up big plays. He does not get big plays. And again, he's just kind of a picture of consistency in coverage. He had one interception, which was a tipped ball that, you know, kind of fell to him. He only had 3 pass breakups, but he did not give up big plays either. So if you're somebody that, hey, just likes big plays, whether it be on offense or defense, Nate Hobbs is not your player to be watching because he's just going to, you know, sometimes you might get a completion on him. It's going to get that player to the ground right away. Again, live to see the next down. Very few PBUs, very few interceptions, very few touchdowns allowed, and very few big plays allowed. What I kind of compare him to a little bit is kind of the corner version of Adrian Amos. Adrian Amos was always in the right place at the right time for the right reasons, never really made those big plays, but was the picture of consistency. And you could always count on him to be exactly where he was supposed to be. It was maddening that he couldn't come up with some of those more big plays because just felt like by happenstance, a ball would find him every once in a while. It just didn't very often. But for Hobbs, it's very similar. Very few big, sexy plays, sacks, turnovers, tackles for loss, anything. Very, very few of those, but very few things that, you know, make him show up from a coverage standpoint where it's one of those things a lot of times as a corner, your name not getting called is usually a good thing. You would get through a lot of games with Nate Hobbs and just be like, man, he didn't make any big plays, but he didn't give anything up either. That's sort of the Nate Hobbs experience. And again, it's kind of the Adrian Amos of the cornerback position. There were some things that he needs to continue to work on, and everything's not perfect. I thought his blitzing was extremely meh. He really had no threat as a blitzer off the edge. I mean, if he was unprotected or like he didn't get blocked, right? In that scenario, yeah, he could get there. I thought he played under control. There were a couple times against like Lamar Jackson early in the season where he blitzed and he came in very under control to make sure that, you know, Jackson didn't like make a move and make a miss and he would get outside and escape or whatever. But I thought overall, not a huge threat as a blitzer from the slot or from the outside. Just didn't see much from him in that regard. And then I think his tackling is a little bit overhyped. He actually had a really high missed tackle percentage this past year. When you hear anyone talk about him, they'll talk about, oh, he's such a good tackler. He's fine. I don't think it's good. I don't think it's great. I don't think it's terrible. I think it's a little bit closer to below average than it is average, but it's probably right around average. And again, it's fine. I'm not concerned over it, but I think you usually hear Nate Hobbs talked about as like, oh, he's this really great tackling core. Yeah, he's fine. He's fine. It's nothing that you're going to get burned by usually, but he will let some tackles go by. And he's not the greatest like rally to the football player and tackle either. You know, if they get by him, he kind of lets sometimes the other players do, you know, just get to, you know, hopefully get him to the ground or whatever. So there's things he can clean up there. And again, the blitzing was pretty meh. But overall, I thought his coverage, which is the most important, looked really, really good. And last but not least, I just think he's a really strong scheme fit for Jeff Hafley. Well, first of all, we know how Green Bay loves their versatile players, right? His ability to play outside or in the slot. And he even said he can play safety in a pinch if you needed to him as well. I think that's going to fit very well. But more importantly, what Jeff Hafley is looking for, he's a good enough tackler. Again, it's average, it's fine. But his ability to cover outside, inside, and just play a zone defense at a very high level, which is exactly what we saw to Jeff Hafley this past year, I think he's going to be a perfect fit. I think Hafley's really going to like him. What I saw in minicamp and OTAs when he was out there, I thought he looked really, really good. And it looks like, again, he's going to be a real legitimate player for this defense and somebody that I think you can really count on. I'll just kind of wrap by saying, I know there's that concern about the secondary. I think you should feel good about what Nate Hobbs is going to bring to this team. I'm not saying Green Bay's got a shutdown corner in any of their players that are on this roster right now, but I do think Nixon, Hobbs, and Valentine are starting caliber players. Now you might have, you know, three number two type corners, you know, maybe no number three, maybe no number one. Maybe they're all kind of that number two type, but I think you have good players that you can count that they're going to make things difficult for opposing offenses and opposing wide receivers. And what's so important in this Jeff Hafley defense is communication on the back end, making sure you're not blowing assignments, making sure you're contesting everything, and making sure that you're rallying to the football and making plays as a tackler. Some things, again, Hobbs can work on the tackling and rallying to the football maybe a little bit, but I think overall, his coverage ability and his ability to communicate everything on the back end and play zone defense at a very high level, I think those things are going to be very beneficial to not only Jeff Hafley, but this Packers defense as a whole. I'm just going to add it one more time. I know I've said it multiple, but the big swing here, going from Eric Stokes, lowest graded player on the team, to Nate Hobbs, a player that I graded well in the positive, plus 1.50, would have been Green Bay's highest graded corner this past year, I do think is a pretty significant add to this defensive backfield and somebody that I think can, again, really, really bring this secondary to a level where you don't feel as opposing offense that there's a weak link that you can attack over and over again. I felt like they had a weak link to go after in Eric Stokes. Now that that's gone, and now that you have a legitimate starter in his place in Nate Hobbs, that is going to make things, I think, a little bit easier on Jeff Hafley, and hopefully, more importantly, maybe give that defensive front a little bit more time to get after the quarterback as well. That's going to do it for me today. Again, things that I learned about Nate Hobbs, just kind of going through these really quick, knowledgeable in coverage concepts, can play inside and outside, can play man and zone, complete lack of penalties, understands route concepts, has a little sneaky veteran grab from time to time, which is a good thing. He's very assignment sure, extremely consistent. Blitzing was meh. Tackling's a little bit overhyped. He's fine. Doesn't get the big plays, good or bad. No interceptions or one interception, three PBUs, but doesn't give up those big plays either. And he's a great scheme and team fit for what Green Bay looks for at the position. Shout out to our All-Pro and Hall of Fame members, Most Hated Minnesotan, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Brandon Paletta, Boom Handle, Donnelly, Lori Lord, Baby QB, Dave McCluskey, Donald Decker, Alex Wong, Peter Rataka, Jay Zimmerman, B. Brown, Puerto Rican Packer, Dan Gesford, Dylan Patscott, SoCal Pack, Chris Rager, Izzy Roberts, Ian Ewing, Jake Conner, Carla Delgado, Willie Winkle, Single Gen Wright, The Gable Storm, Matt Geiger, Pack Attack Cast, and Chris Weish. I'll see you guys tomorrow, but until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.